fighting for America.
No prayer in our state.
This is not about discrimination. This is about protecting the religious liberty of every Hoosier, of every faith.
The number one hashtag on Twitter is Boycott Indiana.
Fighting for Idaho.
I've always had a problem with eminent domain in any shape or form to have government take away property, regardless of what the excuse.
Fighting for you.
Good morning, Kevin. I just appreciate you being here, and I am very thankful for you. You're just wonderful.
Boise's Mr. Right.
Well, you found a home here.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the Morning. Thank you all for joining us. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter at Kevin Miller Show and Facebook as well. 580KIDO.com. Great blogs going on right there. We always give you a preview of what we're going to be talking about. Joining us now, a former NFL quarterback and soon-to-be best-selling author Jeff Kemp joining us. Facing the Blitz. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. How you doing?
Well, I was a big fan of yours in the NFL. Of course, your father's, he's the first person I voted for when he was running for president back in the day.
Oh, really? Cool.
An honor to, you know, vote for him and, of course, what you guys are all about. Let's talk a little bit about life. It seems to be overwhelming these days.
Life has always been full of its curveballs and surprises, or blitzes, as I put it in the book. But these days, maybe there seems to be more of them economically, relationally. So many families under stress, many families breaking up or not forming. And sometimes we get a little more opposition from the government than we should when we were set to be free people and a free nation. But I wanted to write a book that gave people a positive way to go through those surprises, those challenges, those losses and trials, and actually turn them into positives that can help others, which is the best place to live when you're helping others.
Well, you know, which is more formidable, you know, facing the bare front and you don't have the check down or... You know, some of life's oops moments.
Well, I start the book off with a Monday Night Football game when it was actually the Houston Oilers attacking us in a stadium called the House of Pain down in Houston. And in the next couple seconds, I knew with instead of four guys coming at me, about six of them and too many for us to block, that something either really bad or really good was going to happen, because the blitz is both danger and opportunity. And I did end up on my back, but the ball came out. Everyone changed their routes, and the ball landed in a receiver's hands for a touchdown, and we scored the only touchdown of the game on the blitz. And the analogy for life is that sometimes we need to be changed and matured. We need to have our eyes open to other people and their experiences. We need to maybe have a shift of direction in our life, and it can actually be a difficulty or a loss or a disappointment that we convert into that sort of opportunity. And I've been through a bunch of them in my non-football life, and I tell a bunch of stories in this book about people who've faced the loss of a business, a disease, a paralysis of breaking their neck, even things like losing a spouse to cancer or losing a child, and yet these people have found a positive outcome to serve others through their challenge.
Jeff, where does that come from? Is it the Lord? Is it something internal? Is it both? Well, you've just described what's in your book, Facing the Blitz. I mean, I couldn't imagine being paralyzed, losing a loved one to cancer, losing everything, and yet these people come back and have positive attitudes?
Yeah, well, I'm going to give you an example, and I'll take you through the strategies all in one person's life. A gal I met in Gig Harbor, Washington, serving at the restaurant where I was eating, and she handed me a little flyer for a nonprofit that she developed called Permission to Dream Again, and they ran a race that raised funds for soldiers returning from war who were facing PTSD, and she wanted to protect them and make sure that they didn't lose their lives here in America to the effects of PTSD and the side effects. So the gist of the deal is that this gal, Leslie Maine, had lost her son, who came home from Iraq fighting for America and for freedom, and he ended up with PTSD so severe that a series of events took his life, and she lost her only son. She went into a period of grieving and was just so despondent. But after a while, she started to say, I've got to get it together because I have other kids who depend upon me. She started to run. She started to pray and say, God, show me the positives in this world. And she started looking for the positives. But it was really when a teammate, a friend, called her and said, you know what, I'd like you to come with us on this mission trip to New Orleans. And I'd like you to chaperone some teenagers that are going to be serving victims of Hurricane Katrina. And when that friend invited Leslie to do so, and Leslie chose to step out and serve others and chaperone these kids and then help these folks in New Orleans that had had their own tragedies and blitzes, she started to come alive and her spirit warmed and she saw hope in her life again. She had a renewed joy that she had been missing since her son had passed away. And she then came home and said, you know what, I'm going to start this foundation. I'm going to help other families whose soldiers come home with these effects of PTSD. And today she has vibrant joy. She's helping thousands of families and soldiers. And the keys to facing the blitz are take a long-term view, be willing to grow and to change, and turn toward other people. Reach out to bless them. And it's only possible if you've got a team approach to life and you'd like to invest in people rather than consume from them. And as Leslie found, you do need a power source greater than yourself. And that is God. He made us. He loves us. He wants us to be back in touch with him. And he actually wants to be the power for our lives, but not in a selfish way. He wants to use us to serve others, which is the journey that I've been blessed to be on.
Well, let's talk about you. You come from a successful family. You've been successful, you know, in a sport where it's about team, but about oneself as well. So your personal journey to being other-centric, if you will.
Well, I mean, you say successful. Yeah, I played 11 years in the NFL. The funny thing is I've played 20 years of football in my life, and only one time in all those 20 years did I go into the season as the starting quarterback. I've normally been a third stringer or a second stringer, the backup, and I had this dad who was always saying, hey, Jeff, I believe in you. Your day's going to come. You know, think like a starter. Keep working hard. You can't be a leader. So dad one time saw me play. He said, Jeff, you know, you played great today. I said, Dad, I didn't even get in the game. I was all up, frustrated and mad. He said, oh, I know. I saw you warming up. You're throwing the ball great. So my dad was the classic encourager, and we parents need to encourage our kids, not just about performance. Most importantly, we need to encourage them about their character, about their identity. Little girls need to know that they are beautiful inside and out, that they are talented, that they are cherished, that they're worth choosing and protecting, that you would die for them, that their value is infinite. And little boys need to know, you know what? You have what it takes. You can measure up. You're a man. That's the question that many of us men are asking. So I had this experience of bouncing my way up, finally making it in the NFL, getting some success, but also getting traded, getting cut, being rejected. And those experiences drove me to put my identity not in my pro football resume, but in my relationship with God and in my relationship with my wife, my relationship with my kids. And as football wore on, I realized, you know what, I'm not going to win a Super Bowl probably, but I can use this platform to help children by strengthening marriages, which is the upstream DNA of the family that protects kids. So that's kind of how my journey unfolded. And I give credit to my God and a lot to my wife and an amazing group of Christian players that I went through football with that were always a teammate and helping me.
Facing the Blitz, Jeff Kemp with us, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. You talk about your personal challenges. Can you take us through the process of being cut? Because, again, most of us would say, wow, we'd love to play in the NFL if we were a backup or whatever, and just to be there. But we fail to look at you as an individual, as Jeff Kemp, the person, not Jeff Kemp, the player.
Well, I wrote this book to encourage and identify with other people, not to gain sympathy or to tell my story like it's something outrageously special. But I mostly tell challenging stories because I think people can identify with those more than maybe winning a Super Bowl. So if you've been through junior high, you know the feeling of rejection and comparison and being made fun of. If you've been in the workplace, you know that conditional value system that, what have you done for me lately? Sometimes they lop you off and you can't believe that they didn't appreciate you. So when I left football, I'd had a really good year in 1991, started for the Seahawks and then the Eagles and won most of the games and signed a big contract the next year. But they cut me on the last day of training camp. They couldn't trade me to any team. I went home to Seattle from Philadelphia. I waited 4 weeks of the season for someone to sign me, and no team called me up. It was quite discouraging. And finally, when the Seahawks had a quarterback get hurt, I called the coach and I thought, oh, good, this is the answer to my prayers. You know, a lot of times we pray, God, fix my circumstances. He may be more interested in fixing us to handle circumstances. But I called the coach. I said, I'm in town. I'm ready. I'm in shape. Sign me. And he called back and said, no, we're going to sign someone else. Good luck to you. And I went out to my front porch and I shut the door and I said, this sucks. I can't believe this. I can't believe I'm finishing like this. So I sat down and have a pity party with myself. And I'm a believer in Jesus, a Christian. And I said, God, I'm not going to pray. I'm just going to sit here and feel this stinking pain. This is ridiculous. So as I was doing so, my wife came out. And again, here's the key to the facing the blitz. You need a team. And my wife says, oh, Jeff, I can't imagine how much this hurts. But I just want to remind you that every time we've been through something tough, you know, God's been faithful and good. There's the next chapter has come that's shown something positive. And I said, I know that. I just can't believe it's finishing like this. I just want to finish football with some dignity. And then Stacy said to me, you know, as I recall, and perhaps this is an appropriate comment, this is, you know, the week leading up to Good Friday and Easter. And she said, Jesus Christ didn't leave this world with any dignity. Maybe you need to let go of that desire. And I looked at her. I said, maybe you need to go inside. She stepped inside, and then I had my blitz of losing my career, which is not as bad as losing a spouse to cancer or some of the challenges that others have gone through. But it's intense at that moment, 32 years old, and it hurts. And all of a sudden, it turned around in a matter of seconds because I realized I was whining about wanting a 12th year of pro football when I had a God that would go through unbelievable indignity to love me and to solve all my problems and to give me an eternal security and peace. And all of a sudden, I had a time of rejoicing and gratitude. And it was like, okay, forget what lies behind. Press on to your next stage, which for me was running a nonprofit that strengthened families. So that was a case of a blitz, and I finally got a longer-term view. I was willing to become more humble and grateful, not to make my identity in my career. And then I started to think, you know what, I'm going to focus on others and do what I want to do to serve others. And I had a teammate, Stacy, that was there with me, helping me have that perspective. And, of course, it was really God's love that set me free to get out of that blitz and turn it into a blessing. Going forward. So there's a pattern there for people, whether it's breaking your arm or losing your savings or getting kicked out of a job or having a diagnosis of cancer. Your attitude and your strategy toward approaching it make all the difference.
Facing the Blitz, Jeff Kemp's new book, facingtheblitz.com. For more information, Jeff, finally, the world we live in, it's materialism, it's secularism, it's a lot to overcome. And is it really just as simple as saying, Lord Jesus, help me?
Well, that's the starting place. I think the words that you just said were humble words. And I think if most of us think back to every time we've been arrogant and proud, so we can do it on our own or we're more important or better than other people, it hasn't worked out well. Have you ever been proud in a marriage and won an argument without both of you losing?
Right.
So I would say that the key to life and the key to history is all good things come through humility and all bad things come through pride. And by that pride, I'm talking about a selfish, self-centered arrogance. And by humility, I mean not a little mousy, weak person that just lays down. I mean someone who says, you know what, I can't solve it on my own. There is a God and he's bigger than me and I want to know his answer. So please help me. And then the humility that says, you know what, other people matter, and I'm not going to make myself more important to them. I'm actually going to put their interests ahead of myself. And the paradox of life is that the generous, the kind, the other-centered are the most happy when you look at the social science research. And they also make for great football teams because the humble quarterback that's serving wide receivers and the humble wide receiver that serves the quarterback and isn't whining about not getting the ball enough, that's the team that can go to the Super Bowl. The next year they get rings and all sorts of praise, and the humility goes away and they have a hard time repeating.
Jeff, we appreciate it. God bless, sir.
Thanks so much for being on your show, Kevin, and I just hope this book is a great encouragement to people. I've already heard some stories of lives that have turned around, so thanks for the time, and I hope that we could touch some people today.
I think we did. Thank you again.
All right. Take it.
Bye-bye. There you have it. Jeff Kemp, Facing the Blitz, and really – haven't we learned a lot here when we're talking about being other-centric as opposed to ego or me-centric. Facingtheblitz.com, great stories, real stories of inspiration from Jeff Kemp. Coming up this hour as well, Chris Boddy will join us. He's coming to town. Find out what he's going to be doing at the Morrison Center and, of course, some of his greatest hits, When I Fall in Love, To Love Again, the duets, and all those. We'll talk to him about being an internationally famous musician coming to the Treasure Valley. Coming up next, though, a few things I do want to get into. Your thoughts on Indiana. Apparently now they're going to revisit the religious freedom law, number one. Number two, isn't it ironic that we have Apple and Angie and everybody else condemning the state of Indiana, yet they do business with China, Cuba, and other places that would make us all think twice about human rights? Those stories and your phone calls at 580-5436. Next, time for traffic now.
If people knew and understood in Idaho what they've got with Kevin Miller here at KIDO, they would all tune in.
Yes, good morning, Kevin. I love your show, by the way.
Good morning, Kevin. You have a great show. You got a great bunch of guests on.
Good morning, Kevin. You're doing fantastic.
You're doing a great job. Thank you.
Let's get it started. Getting more done before sunrise than anyone. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And 580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. The conversation continuing about the state of Indiana. Now Mike Pence will have the legislature put in a provision to make sure that the LGBT community is not discriminated against. Even though this law wasn't about that, even though this law protects Muslims, Indians, and Christians throughout the country, it was put into law by Bill Clinton. It's funny, though, how people have decided that Indiana is horrible and other places are great.
Blew up over the past couple of days. Thoughts?
Well, first, there's nothing more tiresome in modern American life than the indignation sweepstakes we get in all the time to see who can be most angry about this and that. Tim Cook, as was mentioned, CEO of Apple, as Peter Doocy mentioned in his piece, thinks Indiana is a horrible place. He opened marketing and retailing operations in Saudi Arabia 2 months before a man was sentenced to 450 lashes for being gay. So the selective indignation is itself wonderful. There are obviously two important principles at stake here. One is the government should rarely, and only with extreme difficulty, compel people to take actions contrary to their consciences. The other is that when you open your doors to commerce, you open them to everybody. That's a simple thing. It goes back to the 64 Civil Rights Act, the public accommodation section, which is surely one of the great moments in American history.
There we have it, George Will from the Big Fox. Locally, as we first reported last night on 580 KIDO, that story that I wrote is still up there concerning, hey, it was a great deal for people that don't want to pay more for the gasoline tax. It was shot down by the Senate. Remember, the House voted overwhelmingly to eliminate the grocery sales tax, to give tax breaks to people that make over $400,000 in the state of Idaho, about $5,000, and on top of that, to raise the cost of doing business gasoline, 7 cents per gallon, totaling 32 cents a gallon here in the Gem State. And look, I was at the gas station the other day. It was lined up with big trucks that consume a lot of gas. People were filling up their water vehicles. People were filling up their landscaping vehicles. What has not been the case is that the state legislature, the Department of Transportation, with due respect, there's the due respect bell, has not made the case that you need to feel the pain at the pocketbook. You know, where are the town hall meetings? Where are the information? Where's the reports concerning the bridges? Look, no one wants what happened in Minnesota, Minneapolis to happen here when we're talking about roads and bridges, right? You know that. I know that. We don't want that. We want roads and bridges to be safe. Well, if they're crumbling, let's have a detailed report. Let's also have a detailed report where the money went previously. Now, apparently, according to the legislature, it's due to growth that more people are coming into Idaho. But if that's the case, then more people would be using gas, right? And if more people are now back on their recreational vehicles, that would be bringing in more revenue to the coffers of the state. And the Senate was right to shoot this down. Remember, the State of the State address with Governor Otter, what were the many things he talked about? One of them had to do with roads and bridges. And he said to the legislature, hey, you figure it out. I tried it and got slapped the last time. I'm not going to do that, but I will support fixing the roads and bridges. You've had the media basically saying, hey, the crumbling roads and bridges, although we haven't had proof of that. They're just echoing the points coming from the Department of Transportation. Where is the objectivity? And quite frankly, I don't believe that any branch of government has made their case convincingly enough to raise the gas tax. I would say repeatedly, again and again, no new gas tax. Repeat after me. While you're driving, please pay attention. No new gas tax. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
April 12th, a big day at the Morrison Center. Chris Bode with us. Chris, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. What's it like in New York right now?
It's not quite spring, but it's getting there. It's been a long, gruesome winter as far as cold is concerned, but it's beautiful today. It's warming up a bit.
Well, we can't wait for you to come here to the Morrison Center in Idaho. Your thoughts on coming to the Treasure Valley and performing?
Well, I think this will be my third time to Boise. I'm from Oregon originally. I grew up in Oregon, so it feels a little bit like home, you know, more in the hood than I am now. And so we're really looking forward to it. We have the great band that I tour with the A Squad, as I call them. And so we're so looking forward to coming to back Boise.
Tell us about your love for music that you'll convey, whether it's here in Boise or in Oregon or even in New York. Why dedicate your life to your passion?
You know, those things are kind of hard to describe. I mean, I think now that I meet so many young people that want to play an instrument, and it's one thing to say, you know, boy, I'd really like to be famous or have a great career, but I think when that spark ignites in you and you're a kid and you don't think about all of those other things, you just think about the love for the instrument and the love for music, and you really dedicate your life to it, those are the things that kind of make ultimately someone, I guess, you know, have a career in music. I didn't really think about any of those things. I just was really, when I heard Miles Davis play and Doc Severinsen both, it really ignited this passion in me to want to practice and hours and hours and hours and hours a day, mainly because maybe I thought I wasn't going to be Michael Jordan. You know, I mean, I knew I wasn't going to be an athlete, and so I wanted to do something positive with my life, and music sort of took over in a very, very good way.
How important was it for you to win the Grammy?
I've been saying this for years. For if you're an actor and you win an Academy Award, which is a wonderful thing, you get to walk on stage in front of that audience and say thank you, and the whole world sees it. And it's a great thing for your career. But for a musician, especially for someone like me, my Grammy is kind of already been in place. I mean, my ability to sell a ticket in a basketball arena in Warsaw, or sell out Sydney Opera House for a couple nights, which you're doing in Australia coming up, or Boise or wherever. I mean, that when you walk on stage is your Grammy, because the Grammys in music ultimately are kind of set up to be a teenage television show, you know, Taylor Swift and Justin Bieber and all that. But for adult music like what I do, or more sophisticated music, the ability to sell a concert ticket is your Grammy Award, and I feel super, super lucky. Yes, it's nice to have the acknowledgement, but ultimately you really want to have a concert goer have a feeling where they want to come back and see you. And so when we play a show, wherever it is, my Grammy is how long does it take for that promoter to hire us back? Really, that's kind of – it's a very simplistic view, but it is the reality of it, because you can be famous overnight vis-a-vis The Voice or American Idol or something like that, and you may not ever end up selling a ticket around the world for very many months or years. And so I feel super fortunate to have been, you know, a Grammy winner for a long time, even though technically, you know, I've only gotten one or two as one as a producer a long time ago.
It's about the quest, not the destination.
Kind of, yeah. And you know, you also have to acknowledge the fact when you have an audience, you know, and I've been lucky enough to have that and been able to retain and grow it. And a lot of musicians kind of do whatever self-destructive things, or they go reclusive or whatever. and I've been around a lot of people that have had super successful careers and modeled my careers after them, and it's worked.
What do you say to folks that right now, you know, on one hand, we don't appreciate music enough when kids want to go into music? Well, you need to do this, you need to do that. Yet, we're all big fans of you that have made a career out of it. How do we balance that? How do we encourage kids that a musical education is a great one?
Boy, it's a good question. First of all, I always say that, you know, every parent is telling them, you know, the other parents in the neighborhood that their son or daughter is destined to be the next Paul McCartney, until the moment that that kid comes out of the practice room and says, "Mom, Dad, I'm moving to L.A. or London or New York to find myself in music," and then they all go, "Whoa, we were kidding. We want you to be a lawyer or a doctor," because that protective kind of essence of a parent takes over, and they're fearful for their kid because it is such an unstable profession, and I really applaud any kid that has ultimately the ability to convince their loved ones and those people around them that this is what they want to do with their life. And music education, you know, I'm obviously a huge advocate of it because it's been the whole thing in my life. But, I mean, even if you don't ever become Paul McCartney, you learn how to play a little guitar in your dorm room. It's going to be a great thing for your social life, and you can play fun songs. And it's a wonderful thing to have in your life, to play piano or violin or whatever it is. You don't have to be a maniac trumpet player like I am. But ultimately, if you decide to make it your craft, you have to like have it inside your internal being to convince those around you that it's the right thing for you.
And to overcome not only external but internal doubts that we all have no matter what we do.
Absolutely. And every day it's a battle, you know, and it's a huge sacrifice to do, you know, to be a musician, and there's absolutely no guarantee of any kind of payoff. You know, it's a weird business, and it's getting weirder by the day thanks to a lot of things that are crumbling the music industry, so to speak, and that's why I kind of feel ever more grateful to have an audience.
Do you consider your life normal?
Heck no. I mean, first of all, I live in a hotel. Secondly, I kind of am void of any kind of, I don't really own any possessions or have a dog or a plant or a cat or a family. And you know, I've really kind of done what I've said I did just now in the last few minutes, dedicated my life to music, and it's kind of anything but normal. And yet I feel so very, very lucky. It's been an incredible ride, and I hope it continues.
And for people that are going to see your show, would like to see your show April 12th at the Morrison Center here in the Treasure Valley, what would you say to them?
Well, first of all, it's completely different than my records. I mean, my records are kind of all meant to be like beautiful and romantic, et cetera, you put on and you kind of trip out. But the show is more of like a concert, like you know, there's three different special guests, two different singers, an incredible classical violinist, and a band that I don't think you're ever going to see the same level of musicians. And they're all superstars under their own rights. They're handpicked because we tour so much. And that's what people really say when they see me for the first time. Oh, my God, we had no idea it was going to be like this dynamic, this virtuosic, this et cetera, entertaining. They kind of think it's going to be more like a show where we just reduplicate the records. That's really the last thing we do. And that's ultimately why the audiences have turned over and become bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, because word of mouth ultimately is the strongest thing that you can get.
Chris, we appreciate it. Safe travels, and thank you for sharing the life of your dream with us, and hopefully inspiring more folks like you to contribute to our society.
Well, thank you very much. We hope to see everyone in Boise, and we'll take care, all right?
Yes, sir. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. By the way, if you want to see Chris Bode, 426-1110. That's at the Morrison Center, 426-1110. 847, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Let's get you to
Hannity. Weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
853, Kevin Miller in the morning. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin Miller Show. Follow the station at 580KIDO. We're all living in the Twitter universe, if you will. Big story coming out of Indiana, as we talked about, Governor Pence backing down concerning religious freedom. Interesting, and I posted this on my Facebook at, what is it, just Kevin Miller, Washington Times story talking about religious freedom, where religious freedom laws help Muslims, Indians, and Sikhs. Indiana governor says the measure was never intended to allow discrimination. Well, this is what the religious freedom law was about. It was signed in 1993. Didn't give people licenses to discriminate, but let's say you had long hair and people wanted you to cut it. Well, your long hair is part of your religion. It would protect you from that. Instead, the federal law allowed Abdul Muhammad, a Muslim prisoner in Arkansas, to grow a half-inch beard thanks to the Texas version. A Lipan Apache kindergartner was permitted to wear his hair long. Another person won a settlement against the Internal Revenue Service after being fired for carrying a kirpan, a small knife worn to remind Sikhs of their commitment to justice. And you have another gentleman. He was a Lipan Apache, had his feathers returned to him by the federal government after they were seized in a 2006 raid by undercover agents. It's nice to know that the federal government are taking people's eagle feathers. Apparently, this gentleman, Robert Soto, had filed a lawsuit citing the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, arguing that the feathers were sacred and used in religious ceremonies. The Fifth Circuit agreed. You look at the last 20 years, you look at the federal government, the states have had these laws on the books. It's to protect religious minorities and to stop discrimination. However, let's face it, the truth when we're talking about the politically correct, it doesn't matter, because it's augmented and strengthened by people in the media that either A, have an agenda, or B, are ignorant. They don't like God. They don't like faith. They don't like America. Their version of America is the state of Idaho, a place where people work hard, they play outdoors, they raise families, and they worship freely. For really, isn't this an attack on religion itself? And incrementally, as we've seen the fight go from civil unions to marriage to discrimination, what's next? Well, it'll be the churches. Because if you have enough blank to go after a state and to vilify it and to call it all horrible things and make baseless allegations that people aren't safe because of their sexuality in Indiana, well, the churches have to fall next. And what we've seen is an elevation of secular sexual advances at the expense of religion. One is guaranteed by the Constitution. The other isn't. Guess which one? 580-5436, 580-KIDO. So that's one of the big issues. You have people in Arkansas that gave final approval Tuesday to their own Religious Freedom Restoration Act. The governor, who's expected to release a statement saying he would sign it. This bill is about protecting religion, about someone's right to believe what they want to believe without government interference, according to the bill's sponsor. Now, again, you take a look at Idaho as one of the states that has this law. A, I think it's a good thing, but I wrote about this at 580KIDO.com. What happened to Representative Luker, that he wanted to give businesses the opportunity to deny service? Is that discrimination? If I walk in, gosh forbid, we don't want this visual, with no shoes, no shirt, no service, in my briefs, are they required to serve me at the restaurant? For really, isn't this all about just attacking the standard? You know, if I want to come into work, in my Fruit of the Looms, who's the work to tell me not to? That's discrimination, right? Isn't it my freedom to do that? or do I have to conform? What we're seeing is conformity is out, and anything that goes is in. Take a look at our own controversy involving folks that want some legislation instead of working through the process, because all they wanted was a hearing. They got that, and now they're back to being arrested. Is that the proper way? Is that what role models do to get legislation through? And again, we see the press augmenting speculous, feckless allegations. Time for traffic now. And I'm good old K. Milley. Coming up, we're back in the schools tomorrow. Thank you, CapEd. Thank you, Chick-fil-A. And coming up on Friday, our Matters of Faith program. Good day. God bless. Keep the faith.